Whether your father was a Joseph in therapy?
No, I'm the first in physical therapy. I took physical therapy training after I graduated, and I was married, and then my husband took a corresponding course, and he studied that. And between his studying and he graduating out of his correspondent school, and I went to school, we made our own routine of our therapy besides what we learned at school, and this is what we're doing now. So we combine the American type of physical therapy, shiatsu, and momi, and this new concept physical therapy we have now, that when you get sick or you have come surgery and we have to have orthopedic doctor's orders, we know all that, we train, and so we have a combination. So it works in together. In the meantime, my last son, David, went to UCLA, and he was going to be a dentist, but he had a knee surgery from football, so he quit that, and he came to us. He wasn't going to do dentistry anymore because it was too hard on his legs. At that time, he didn't know how much he could take, so he wanted to go into physical therapy. So there the Lord came and helped us again. They have to have quite a bit of interview at Loma Linda, but I went with my boy to Loma Linda with him, and at the first interview, they accepted him. So then he goes and finishes at Loma Linda and becomes a graduate therapist, and he is now practicing in Costa Mesa.
Was physical therapy rather new area when you started?
Yes. The state didn't even give us a license. Because they didn't in fact, there was no university that taught physical therapy at that time. So massages and things like that, it helped, but the doctors really didn't believe it. They didn't accept us. But when my son and them was accepted, I saw on the wall maybe about not more than 30 or 40 students had graduated therapy, and they were the teachers. So after my son graduated and went in therapy, he knew what the book said and what he had learned in therapy, but actual work and how to take care of the patient, more or less, he tells us. Now, we don't talk to him about it, but he tells us, I learned everything, how to take care of the patient, how to approach him through you. And this nutrition that he is going gung-ho on is, I've seen that so many people need more nutrition in the last 15, 20 years than we did before, because you get the bread off the shelf, they mold in a few days when we were young, but now you can leave there a whole week and they never mold. That means they took the wheat germ out, and all the goodness of the bread is all gone. So I went more nutrition, and I kind of talked to my children. I didn't push them, but I said, nutrition-wise, I think we'd be better off if we taught the public, our patient, how to take care of themselves, and maybe we could do better. And so that's what we're in now.
When the war came, were you living in Yeltsin?
Yes, yes.
Was your husband also, had he moved to Yeltsin at this time?
No. He was still living in Terminal Island. He was working in the Hama hardware store at that time. When Mr. Hama was interned, you know, it was only 24 hours time they had time to get out. He had to take over the whole business, and they had to put him in the warehouse, and Mr. Hama was taken to Tahunga in the jail, and all the businessmen, they thought they were enemies. They picked them all up. But my husband, luckily, he was ready to go in case they picked him up, because he worked for the Japanese people, and he was Senkai's head. He was the president of Senkai, and he was the head of different Japanese Young Men's Association. So they was ready to go. My father was packed, too, because he worked for the Van Camp Seafood for many years. He thought he'd be an enemy, but I told my father, I said, see, if you believe in the Lord, here it is. You're here with us, and my husband's still with us. And they never even got to go. My father, my brother, Tom, was in Utah. He was in the army then. But after 3 months, when we were in camp, they sent him home without no notice. You guys don't belong here no more. But then when the 442nd boys came from Hawaii, and they were going to show that we were loyal, they took my brother back again. And he was in Utah. Oh, I don't know. He was training the boys for a while. Then they found out that he had a leg problem. When he was going to high school, he had a leg injury, and the doctor put a cast on it with a broken bone, not knowingly, I guess, got infected. And before 8 o'clock in the morning, it was so bad, I told my mother, I'll go and call the doctor. You got to take him to the hospital. So they took him to, at that time, was Seaside Hospital in Long Beach, and they had practically almost amputated. But he's got a big scar like that. When he stayed in bed 9 months, and we helped him. I took care of him, and he graduated downstairs. He didn't get up on the podium. But anyway, he graduated, and he still got his leg. We cleaned it every day, and in those days we only had methylate. But we pour whole gobs of methylate and clean all that pus out and keep it clean. There's a little scar there, but he still got his legs.
What did you think when the war broke out, especially with your husband away in Kenmore, which is quite some distance?
Mm-hmm. Took 4 hours to come. He called me one night and he said, I'm not going to get out of here until I clean all this warehouse out, and until I can get home, and the guard will say I can go home. So he stayed there till Mrs. Hama, I don't know where she went, and I had three duplexes on the other side of the building, my property. There were six cottages there. So I brought all the people that had no place to go from Turmel Island. I got a big truck, and we brought them here and put them in all those houses. When I lived here, I took them with me to Manzanar. Mm-hmm. Took all the six families.
So you went from here straight to Manzanar?
Yeah. 8 o'clock in the evening, I got a call from Los Angeles that where all the Turmel Island, my mother and father were, if they want to go, we'll have to be there by noon. So that was 8 o'clock in the evening. The banks were closed. I couldn't, so and the bank opened at 10 o'clock. I went down, drew my money. All I had was very little. I drew it out and closed the account, and we headed to Los Angeles. At that time, I had just enough money to buy a car because it was so hard. We had a little Ford, but it was secondhand, and I needed a car to go to see my mother, and my husband had to drive. So I got me a little Dodge, and I just brought it from Long Beach to here, and the WRA took it away from us. When I went to Manzanar, I looked out my barracks, and here in front of my place, here's a little cream-colored car sitting there. Oh, I'm sure that's my car. I went over to look, and I couldn't quite see. I went around the other driver's side and looked, and sure enough, it was still in my name. And I called my husband at lunchtime. I said, Daddy, you know, my car is sitting out in front of me. He says, oh, you're kidding. I said, it was in Santa Anita racetrack. I said, yes, but it's sitting out there. So he came to look. He was working in the procurement office where all the food came in from Presidio, San Francisco, to the warehouse. He was in that department. So he came to look. Sure enough, it was our car.
Who did you rent the...
I had a naturopath, a German doctor, working for me at that time, just the two of us. So I told doctor, I said, I'm going to leave this to you, and if anything happens, I just told him to padlock and let me know. But in the meantime, the war got so very strong, you know, we couldn't communicate anymore. But he had a nephew in, I think he had a machine shop in Whittier. And we still correspond. He's He's 84 years old, I think, now, the nephew. But when Dr. Peets died, he told me that Doc had died, that he had closed the place up, padlocked it up, and not to worry about it. Time to time he would come. But in the meantime, I would write to the banker here and ask how my place was. They didn't tell me, but when I came back after World War II, they had rented my place, all these places, and I wasn't getting no money.
The bath was renting your place?
The bathhouse, nobody knew how to run it, so it was closed. But they had broken into my linen closets, I had padlocked, and I had all my belongings in there, my linens, my everything in that one room. They had broken in, and they took everything that was usable. Well, we're so far away, and nobody to tell them who took them. And they had taken my toilets out, my lavatory, everything. It was just kind of just a shell of that business was here. I had another house here, and they had broken into that, and some people were living in it. I had no time getting rid of them. I had to get the law to get out of and get them out. But little by little, I stuck with it. I got rid of them. And then I rented it for a while to about 3-4 years ago to all the different Japanese that didn't want to go to the Caucasian places. I kept them there, and my children got big and left home. I didn't have much help then, so I just tore them down.
How did you feel about being going to Nazanon?
Well, I felt real bad. I had, you know, this is my place. I paid for it, and to push us out of here, I feel real bad. But, you know, when you're good to people and you're honest about it, there's always somebody to come to help you, you know. I had a fellow that came to visit this doctor. We used to call him George. And when he didn't have money or nothing to eat, I'd feed him. He'd stay with Doc Peets and sleep, and Doc would come over and eat my place. But I really didn't feel lonesome or anything because they used to help me. My husband was away. I had to have some man here to kind of oversee. He couldn't do too much. He was an elderly doctor, but I felt more at home, like he was a father. And George says to me one day, he says, give me your keys. I didn't know he was a psyche. And I used to carry my key in here because I used to have a cash register and I had a worker, but sometimes I'd miss something. So I'd carry the key in my pocket. So I gave this set of keys to George, and George was hanging on one day and he was kind of psyching me out. And he said, you won't have to go to wait to war. And I said, I am, yeah, you have to go. But he said, you'll come back and within 7.5 years. Within that short time, I don't know, I can't tell you right now how long you'll be gone, but before 7.5 years come, you'll be home. And that made me kind of happy. And then he said, you're going to have 2 boys. I says, you can't tell me that I'm going to have 2 boys. I only have 2 girls. And he says, well, you will. I said, okay, thank you, George. I said, I make my husband very happy. So he told me I'd be back home in 7.5 years, before 7.5 years. I have 2 boys, and I would run into some money. And so I always tell my husband sometime when we're together, I said, you know, we did come home after World War II. We did come home before 7.5 years, where George is there. We got the 2 boys. But I think the money part, and we both have good health. We don't owe anybody any money. And we're happy. I think that's the money. So I think I've got it all.
Did you work in the camp hospital?
Yes, all the time.
As a nurse?
Mm-hmm. The other day when we were going through some old papers and things, because my son had sold his home in Irvine. He had a 4-bedroom home, a very beautiful home up there, and he had sold it. And we were bringing some of his old papers home. I said, I'm going to put in the home, the Nakai archives. Brought home, I was going through some of the old papers, and my husband ran into some manila folder, and he opened this, and I had received it's like an award of appreciation from the camp and the doctors that during the hard time of the hospital during wartime, I had worked very hard, evidently. I had forgotten all that. And I had done so much for the hospital and for the staff that they gave me a little appreciation. And so my husband says, oh, you got a little award during the wartime.
Was your whole family together in the camp?
Yes.
Your parents?
Mm-hmm.
And how about your sisters and your brother?
My second sister in the camp, she had married this boy from Hawaii, and he was a law student. He was going to Harvard when the war broke out. So I don't know how this had come around, but he was in our camp in the bachelor's quarters. And that's why she meets him, and they get married. And then he was called to Fort Benning. They were from 442nd. So they were called out, and he goes to Fort Benning. And we hate to see sister go, but she goes to Chicago. And she gets a job in this garment factory as a foreman, because she was quite a good sewer and a millinery too. So she gets a job, and so she stays there until we come home. And about that time, her husband comes home from Germany, and they move back to Long Beach. The other sister, she stayed in the camp with us. She was married too at the time, but she didn't have any children, so we lived close together, not too far apart. But my mother and father, they stayed with us together. We stayed in one same block, 360 people. I don't know how many family that. I think there was that many family in one in one block. And we ate in one mess hall, the 360 people.
What were the barracks like?
Just regular army barracks. The floors had knot holes, and when the wind blew, all the dust came up. And when I was working in the hospital there, the children, when this big dust storm or whirlwind would come, I'd have, those were very bad cases. I had to take the regular hand tissue paper we have, and I'd make the holes in the eyes and the mouth, and not the mouth, but the nose, because if they put it in the mouth, they swallow all that dust. And the eyes and the nose, I'd cut a hole in them and put it over their face, and they were so sick. And some of them were so sick, they couldn't even turn around. And so I'd stay all night because some of the aides were scared to stay. So I would stay and take care of the sick. And one night we had a very bad dust storm, and my husband came. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. Why I didn't come home, because I'm supposed to be home at 11. And the emergency was already closed. And so he comes and knocks on this. But I couldn't even open the front door because it opened up like this, see. Because those doors were big enough where the beds would go in and out from one barrack to another. We'd move around during the daytime. So I told him, I talked him through the crack, and I said, I can't come home. I've got a sick baby. And he says, well, you're supposed to home. We had 2 girls then. See? He said, you are supposed to take care of your own children. And I said, well, I can't help it. I just can't leave this baby. This baby had what we call Milner disease, the ear infection. And the infection came from the mother keeping this baby home from, I don't recall, it was a measles or chicken pox too long, and she went into coma. And when they brought her in, Dr. Togasaki says to me, she's a pediatrician, she says, well, she lives by morning, 7 o'clock when I come around, he says, she's going to be a lucky baby. So I had to save her. And during the night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, her stomach got so heavy and distended. And I thought, oh, my goodness, poor thing. So I opened the barrack. The children were all asleep. We had about 80 babies. But I screened this one off on the side. And I went to the latrine. And I went to the mess hall, and there's nothing in the mess hall, but there's a watchman there. I wanted to, we washed the babies' faces and the children's faces in those 3-pound cans where the food came in. We cleaned them, and we used those for our cleaning and sterilizing, because that's the only way we could take care of them. So I went to the latrine, I got the hot water, and I cleaned this can real good. And I asked the cook for a mason jar or a mayonnaise jar, anything. And I sterilized that in the hot water in the latrine. I run in, I cleaned this enema tube, and I inserted it into this little baby. And by 6 o'clock in the morning, the baby was saying, so I knew she was coming too. And that said, relieve that gas that little enema had inserted, had drained. And I didn't want her to get the infection because it's open. You see, the air could go back in. So this jar I had was sterile, and the tube was sterile, so she wouldn't get an infection. So by the time about 8 or 9 o'clock when the doctor came by, her temperature had gone way down. She was opened her eyes, and she was able to take a little bit of water. We had given her boiled water or something. But, she got well and went home.
You mentioned that the pediatrician was a woman?
Mm-hmm. Dr. Togasaki from San Francisco. She was a very hard-boiled woman, but she was a good doctor. I think she's still living. Retired. Her sister was a nurse, too. And her brother was... If I recall, a few years ago, the Rotary International, the president of the whole Rotary, if I remember correctly, and I think he used to be with the some newspaper in Japan, and San Francisco too as well. Nice family.
Right after war, where did you go from that?
Came right home.
Oh, you came right home. I see.
Mm-hmm. I had this in 1939. The war broke out about 41. So I came right straight home.
So you came back here in 45?
Yes. Yes. I came back 45 in March, because the doctor said I can see my, the youngest one born in December. And I wasn't quite able to get out, and I couldn't travel. So I came in March and kind of sized my place up and tried to get the people out of my house. And I went back until my two little girls finished school. Then in June I came out back home.
Your children started school in the camp?
Mm-hmm. Two girls. Mm-hmm.
Was school in the Yans not taught in English?
Yes, English. Mm-hmm. We have regular teachers. And I guess we did have high school there too. I don't recall, but I'm sure we had a high school, because time to time I see in the Japanese paper that they have in Manzanar class reunion of the high school students a year, you know, certain year. I tell my girl one time, the youngest one, the second child, that Minnie, the photographer in Los Angeles, what's his name? He's one of the oldest photographer in Los Angeles. Nori, who's that photographer in Los Angeles, the elderly gentleman? Toyo-san? Toyo Miyatake. Minnie Toyotake and my youngest daughter were schoolmates in Manzanar. Mm-hmm. She's married now.
To
uh-huh.
How did life change after the war and then you came back here?
Was it here?
Mm-hmm.
Very lonely. My husband was in Oregon working to help me pay the taxes here, because I was just starting and the people still prejudiced. And I had the two little babies, and then the two girls were going to school. Although the girl, that little girl, Jane, she was my shopper. She went shopping, and one time this butcher, I had sent her to get top sirloin, and I told her I'd rather get a nice piece of meat instead of get lots of meat and tough. So she went, and this butcher calls me on the telephone. Says, I'm that little girl down here that I can hardly see over the counter, but she says she don't like my meat. And so I said to Stu, I used to call him Stu, and Stu, I says, is it a good meat? Yes, it's a good meat, but it's dark. It's aged, but she won't buy it. I said, you cut her a nice piece of meat, because she's going to be a good customer of yours. So he did. He cut a nice piece of meat, and he showed it to her on a paper. He tells me later on, and I showed her over the counter. Is this what you want, honey? He said, yes, yes. So until the dying days, he's gone now, but he used to tell me, that little shopper, she used to get me on meat. But she's a good house now. She has two girls ready to graduate high school now.
What was your husband doing in Oregon?
Who?
What was your husband doing in Oregon?
He was working on the farm. My uncle had a farm there, and he was working there. He's like a laborer. Then after he came back, the government called him back to Manzanar to clean the camp and put all the documents together. So he was gone. Nori, how long were you gone to Manzanar after we come home? About a year, 6 months?
Where?
To Manzanar. To work on those dockets.
About
6 months?
Yeah. Then I went to Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
When was this?
Oregon.
After we came back from the camp.
Yeah. Right after?
Yes, right after the camp. They called him back, and
well,
he was
going to... that camp, you know, I go to hell, so I get paid. While I was in the camp, we wouldn't get paid. But I was holding down that camp. But when I went to back to work to go to that camp, they pay us a little civil service pay. And I stayed there till they called. Then I went to the Idaho and Oregon to work on the farm to pay up, you know, rent and everything. We didn't have any pay.
So you were raising all the children pretty much by yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When your daughter started to screw up in Elsinore, were you aware of them encountering any prejudice?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. But like I say, I used to talk to them at night and pray with them, and we got along all right. But the people, my second daughter, when she graduated high school, she didn't tell me she had to make a speech or anything. She said, oh, Mother, I have to go to the library and get some, look in some books and something. Now I've got to make a speech. And I said, what kind of speech? He says, oh, you know, when you graduate, you have to talk. And she didn't tell me she was valedictorian. So I said, well, I have some books here, and then you get the material together, and we'll put it together, and maybe it'll sound all right, and maybe not. I says, I'll find some way to help you, but... she's pretty good about that. She fixed it herself. And at the time when she was small and going to school, there were a lot of people prejudiced about her and talked about our children, you know. But I didn't let it bother me. It hurt me, but I didn't let the children know it was bothering me, because I spoke to them that the Lord would help us. Don't worry about it. But when she was making that speech, I was outside graduation, and she was kind of upset about making the speech too, and being the first Japanese girl to go up there and be a valedictorian in a small town, and she felt was kind of uneasy. And I told her I'd be right there, don't worry. And she got the awfulest nosebleed. Oh my! So I had to come home and get an ice pack, and she didn't get up on the stage until she was ready to make that speech. She didn't get up with her group because she had that nosebleed. So I kept praying and that she wouldn't have the nosebleed while she was making her speech. And I had that ice pack on her, and when they called her to make her speech, I prayed that she was sure wouldn't get that ice because, oh, she'd be something terrible. And she did all right. So when she got through the speech, I came back and sat up in the bleacher with the rest of the family. My mother came and my sister came. And I heard a remark that, so she became a valedictorian. And I looked down and I noticed that lady is the one that made a remark about the Japanese people, you know. But I thought, well, she probably didn't feel good about the Japanese people, but at least my daughter had shown them that hard study and perseverance did pay off. And later on, the lady came to, and spoke to me, and I just said thank you. And
when did your husband come to El Señor to join you?
After World War II.
Yes, but he went back to Manzanar, and then he was up in Idaho and Oregon for a
while. So, already to come to work?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that... I guess he worked about a year outside till we kind of caught up and a little easy, and then he came in and went to work together. I think it's about the time that I don't recall right now, but just before the Japanese people were able to get the citizenship papers, about that time I think he came in with me.
When you were raising your children, did you do the discipline, or did your husband do most of the discipline?
No, I did most of it. And my father, he helped me.
What kind of values did you teach your children, and what kind of things were regarded as things that they weren't allowed to do, or?
Oh. Well, I do the same even now. I said, always be good to your classmates. And if they do hit you, I said, don't hit them first time. If you do, you come and tell me or go with the principal. That's when they were small. And but as they grew older, I know they got in all the fights and things, but I didn't say anything about it, as long as they didn't hurt the other party enough that parents had to intervene. I just let alone. They had to grow up sometime.
Did you raise your two daughters any differently from your two sons?
Yes. The boys are hard to handle. They're very hard to handle. The girls were, I didn't even have no problem. The boys were very hard to raise. Especially when they went to college. They each had to have a car, and they had to give them spending money, and I had to have more clothes, and naturally you go to a school like UCLA and things like that, you have a different type of environment, and they like to go out at nights, and you have to give them a little extra money. The girls, they worked, and they batched. They got an apartment, 3-4 girls, 4 girls that stayed together, and sometime when they come home on weekends, I would pick some extra food for them that they could keep in the refrigerator or the girls could share. And but the girls did very well. I didn't have no problem. In fact, when they got married, I didn't even have to, my husband gave them some money to buy a dress, and they made their own dresses. And they made their announcements and their rice. They colored themselves, and they got their own church and their own cake. We didn't really do anything. But the boys, we had.
What kind of expectations did you have for your children as they grew older into adulthood?
Well, I didn't bother them too much. I knew that I told them this, that if you need any help, you, that mom and daddy would help in any way that if we could help. But I didn't want to get in trouble that that anybody couldn't help them, get in law or anything like that. But fortunately, we didn't have that problem.
They ordered you and go to college? So you wanted your daughters to go to college as well?
Oh, yes. Because this way I felt, because I was in that predicament myself, that it took two to make a living. And so I thought, well, if I give my girls education something that they can go right away in, that would help. My oldest daughter is quite an artist. But we took her to different art schools in Los Angeles. My husband took a day off and took her there, and she came home and she cried. She said, I don't like to go to this kind of art school. That's not art school. I said, they have dirty clothes on, their hands are soiled. You can't do art. And she saw art in a different way. She's very particular, very particular. You go to her home and just, right, and there were no children there. She has two children. I didn't keep them clean. So I said, well, next thing, you've had science and you're very good in science and in chemistry. So why don't you go and take nursing? So I guess she thought it over a while, and one day she gave me an answer. She said, okay, I'll go to nursing. But that time, the time had lapsed that she couldn't get into UCLA that semester. So she had to go to Long Beach. I think she went to junior college one semester. And then she was transferred to UCLA, and she finished at UCLA. And she gets a degree in nursing and public health. And so that's where she... But the other girl, she went to UCLA with a scholarship from the auxiliary in Riverside. The doctors' wives have auxiliary, and being valedictorian, she was accepted, and they give her tuition and so forth. But after she was there about a year, why, she kind of gave up, and she thought it was a waste of time. She's going to make more money and buy a car, and her idea was all different. So my husband felt very bad about it, that she had to let it go and go in place, but we let it on. So she took beautician. She got her license, and she did very well in beauty work, and she got her first car. And in the meantime, she meets this Japanese boy from Cyprus, and he went into service. So then she did her beauty work until he comes home, and then she wanted to get married. And at the time, she says, I know you can't afford it, but we want to get married, but I have the money to have the wedding. So she took care of her own wedding. Her husband didn't have the money. He came back from service. But she had the money. She worked in the beauty shop and saved the money. She's a good homemaker. And she finished after she married, and she raised these two girls, and the girls were started high school. She went back to Long Beach State and finished, and when she was, I guess she was about 35, she graduated Long Beach State, and she got summa cum laude in anthropology. So now, time to time, I think she don't say, but she goes to Long Beach State, and she teaches part-time until the girls graduate high school. One will graduate in June, the following year another one will graduate.
Your mother did not really prepare you for things like menstruation, and did you tell your daughters about things like that?
Well, no, I was missed in that too. I didn't talk much about menstruation or anything, but those girls were taking biology in high school, and so they didn't start menstruating until they're about 12, 13 either. So by that time they were in high school and they were taking biology, and they knew about the bees and birds and so forth. So when they came at that age, the girls around here, they had already talked about it. Some had already had started that. So they had already talked about it, and they more or less knew about it. So all I had to do when they told me that they were having this problem, went to the drugstore and got the things, and had this is the way to do it. But I was a little slow on that. I should have got to them a little sooner.
Did you start your social activities? I know that you're very active now, socially. Did you start doing things while your children were still growing up?
No. Only social activity, I was in the PTA. Oh yes, I did a little bit of brownie work. The two girls were in the brownies. We got up to Girl Scouts, and then as they went on to college, then they drifted away. But yes, that I did. A lot of PTA and brownie and Girl Scouts, yes.
Did you have any woman who you could have considered as a friend who you have felt comfortable talking to while your children were growing up?
No, because we live far away. In high school, Asati, she lives in Lancaster. But I've written to her every year, Christmas time, and when we have this class reunion, high school reunion, but she never comes. So she didn't have a mother. Her mother died when they were very young, and there were five girls. So all my friends, the one I was kind of close together, she lives in Colorado or someplace. And while I was here, she came to see me once. I never got to go to Colorado. So, no, I really don't have any. But different clubs and organizations I've been, where I'm fully free and that we talk, just like we're sisters.
Did life change very much after your children grew up and they left?
Yes. Well, you don't have the children, but mentally you're with the children all the time. And when the telephone rings, oh, something's happened. And our living has changed. You put more thoughts to your husband than you had the children. And you try to make him more comfortable, because during the time you're raising your children, I couldn't do everything for to, make him more comfortable. Although he does everything mostly himself.
Can you tell me something about your work?
Physical therapy?
Mm-hmm. In terms of like what kind of hours you keep, what kind of patients you have.
Mm-hmm. I work from 8 to 5 and by appointment only. And I take most any type of that, like an orthopedic type of work or arthritis. Invalids where they've deteriorated and not able to walk and have to be trained. I do that. Those that have stroke and are not able to verify from one thing to another or to cope with their daily living, I try to teach them that. And I do nutrition. Some of them are so run down and they live by themselves, or just the two elderly people. They don't know from white bread to a brown bread. And so I explain it to them, which is good. And I tell them to take supplements to nourish their body. I do a lot of doctor's referral.
Has your work changed considerably since like 46 when you came back to now?
Has the business changed?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. After the AMA accepted us.
Which
was when? Let's see. I think the AMA accepted us about 54. We got our state license And the doctors, so that, for instance, a man breaks his leg and is in a cast and he's stiff or in a different angle and has to be re-educated, why they would send it to us, which brought a better a rapport between the doctor and the therapist. And the public knows what we can do, what we can do. So it has changed a lot. We do